So we saw the Gemara with the top of the Lamed Aleph Omed base. Now we began looking yesterday at what's the halacha, very interesting halacha, of when a shtar is held in escrow, if that's the right way of putting it. What exactly is the ne'emonus, the believability of somebody? What is the status, or as you Americans would call it, what is the status of this person who's holding the shtar? He's neither the borrower or the lender. So if I might think that he's not a baal din, he's not a man da'ama, he's just holding it. Right? Imagine if I deposit money with the bank. I've got $1,000, I put it in the bank, and then I have an argument with somebody, dude, you owe me money, you don't owe money, and suddenly the bank manager says, yeah, you do, you've paid. Excuse me, who asked your opinion? You're not a man da'ama over here, you're just holding my money. So that was the question. Are they believed or are they not believed? We had two Lishnas, and the bottom line is in the second Lishna, Rav Nachman says, if you're holding the shtar, you are not believed. You are not believed. As long as the shtar is around, that itself is the greatest proof that the money is still owed, and the shlish, this third party, the escrow party, is not believed to say, actually, this money has been paid. So have a look at the Gemara. We're on the second line, Esvei, Ravala of Nachman. Top of the Lamed Aleph Omed Bes. Esve Ravala of Nachman, Frekt Rava to Rav Nachman. Simpoin. What's a simpoin? Have a look at Rashi, second line, a receipt. Rashi says simpoin, Shaver. Shaver is a receipt. Why is shever a receipt? What are the root letters of shever? Shever, to break. If I have a shtar that says, you owe me money, then the receipt, as it were, breaks the potency of the shtar. Because whatever it says in the shtar, you owe me $10 trillion, but the receipt says, sorry, I've paid it. Therefore, your shtar is irrelevant. So, simpo in a shever, v'yotza mitachas yad loiver. And the shaver now emerges from the hand of the loiver, the borrower, k'mishpotei al pi halacha. So who is the one who holds the receipt? Obviously, the borrower. It's in his interest to make sure that there is a receipt. And so if ever the malva comes along and says, you owe me money, he says, excuse me, I have a receipt. Now look back into the Gemara. Simpoin sheyesh olav edim. What happens if I have a simpoin, I have a receipt, which has the signatures on it? It's been formally signed by two Edim, Reuven and Shimon, says the Gemara, the Braisa, Yiskayim b'choismov. What does it mean, Yiskayim b'choismov, says Rashi? Yiskayim hashtar, the shtar will be considered valid, b'choismov, in other words, with those who signed it. Yo'idu Edim al-chasimois yadein, the Edim will come along and say, yes, we confirm this is our signature, the kosher, and is then kosher. Now, what happens if ein olav edim, says the Gemara? What happens if there are no edim on this receipt? V'yotza mitachas yedei shlish. Oh, we're back to our escrow story. Who's holding the receipt? Not the loiver. If the loiver produces a receipt with no signatories on it, well, then we all understand that's worthless. Maybe you just wrote it yourself this morning. You've got no way of backing up the validity of this shaver. But what happens if the shaver, albeit, does not have edim on it, but it's not being held by the loiver, as it would normally be? Who is it being held by? A shlish. Like we mentioned yesterday, for some reason, on occasion, it may well be the wishes of the malve or the loive or both to rely on a third party, an independent third party, either to hold the original shtar or in our case to hold the shaver. So here we have the shaver or the more called the simpoin. It does not have edim on it and it's being held by the shlish. So look at the Gemara. Ein olav edim v'yotzumi tachas yidei shlish. What happens if it did not have signatories on it, but it's being held by a shlish? What exactly does that mean? So have a look at Rashi on the last wide line. Hey, nol aveidim. Says Rashi, Einol of Edim, Vahari hu yoitse, and this shtar, this shoiver, emerges mitachas yad shlish. And it emerges, interestingly enough, from the hands of a shlish, of a third party. Veloi mitachas yad haloiva. And it does not emerge, as you would expect in under ordinary circumstances, it does not emerge from the hands of the loiva, as we mentioned before. Who would you normally expect to be holding the shaver? Obviously, the borrower. It's in his interest to ensure that he's got a receipt. But in our case, we're not talking about that. Our case, we're talking about it's actually held by the shlish. Says Rashi, Ha'yil v'shnehem moedim. Because they both admit. Who's both? The malva and the loiva. All parties admit that what? Shezeh minohu. This one has been appointed liyos shlish b'nehem. This person has been formally appointed. Both parties agree that yes, we actually requested of him. We appointed of him to be the shlish. Therefore, kosher. Even though, now this is the point that we're trying to get at now. Even though the shaver does not have edim. But that's the whole point over here. Because we have based our belief, our trust, on a third, an independent party, so whatever they say is believed, even if it doesn't conform with the regular halachas of Edim. So if the loive himself would produce the shaver, as we said before, then it's got to have Edim. And if it doesn't have Edim, it's worthless. What is it? It's a piece of paper. We don't know who wrote it, who forged it, what happened. We don't know anything about it. But if it is produced by the shlish, as Rashi said, because we both agreed to rely on him, therefore it's kosher. Look back into the Gemara now. If it does not have Edim on it, but it doesn't emerge from the hand of the loive, it emerges from the hand of the shlish. Oh, sheyotza. Now look at another case. Achar chitum shtoris. Kosher. Or it emerged, let's literally translate, after the signatory on the shtar. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Normally, where would you expect a shaver? A shaver is normally an independent document. It's a separate document, a receipt. Says Rashi, Oy sheyotzo acha chistum shtoris betoich shtar hamilve nichtav. The receipt is actually written on the original documentation of loan. It's not a separate document. It's written betoich shtar hamilve nichtav hasheva. That's where this receipt is written. Where exactly? Tachas ha'edim. Underneath where the edim sign. In other words, a regular shtar, what does a regular shtar look like? A regular shtar, first and foremost, has the date and then the whole nusach of the shtar. At the bottom of the shtar, obviously, two edim sign. Here we're talking about after the signatories of the two edim, beneath there's written the receipt. The malva has written, I hereby declare that the above loan has actually been paid. Now, again, this is a strange case. Who's holding the receipt? The malva. Normally, you'd expect it to be the loiva. So we've had two strange cases. Case number one, where it's not being held by the loiva, it's being held by the shlish. Case number two, it's not being held by the loiva, it's being held by the malva, but not as a separate shtar, rather as an addendum, as an addition to the original shtar milva. That is also kosher. Why, says Rashi? B'toich shtar ha-milva nichtav ha-shoiva. In the Shtara Milva, the receipt is written Tachas Ho'edim, underneath where the original Edim have signed, kosher. Why? Shehareha Malva Atzmoy. Because it is the lender himself, Muchzik B'shtore, the fact that he is holding the Shtar. That itself is the greatest proof that this is genuine. Why? Because the Ilav Depore. Had he really not paid, had the loan not been paid, lo yehavashovik, he would have never have allowed lemichta for anybody to write tavra, a receipt, begave on the shtah. If the loiver produces the receipt without signatures, well, of course, we have every reason to suspect, ah, of course you wrote this. You wrote this up this morning. You've got no backing up. There's no edim. You just made it up. But why on earth would the malva allow anybody to write a receipt on his shtar? So even though it doesn't have edim, nonetheless, it is kosher. So this brisa we have now ended. We have seen two exceptions to the rule. The rule is a shoiver, like any other shtar, has to have edim. If it doesn't have edim, it's worthless. Otherwise, anybody could just forge it. But if it emerges from the hand of the shlish, or it emerges from the hand of the malva himself, then the shtar is kosher. Now, why are we quoting this brisa at all? Look at the Gemara. Alma shlish mehemon. So I see that the third party is believed. We just said before that the third party doesn't have ne'emonus because he's not really one of the two protagonists. He's neither the loiver nor the malva. And this is the Gemara's kasha that Rava says to Rav Nachman, I'm very sorry to tell you, how on earth can you say that a shlish is not believed? We have a mufurash b'raisa that the shlish produces a shoiva. It's got no signatories on it. We would have l'chayra every reason to doubt its validity, and yet the Bryce says, no, it's good. The shlish has a special lem on us. Says the Gemara, tiyuvta, the Rav Nachman. Yes, tiyuvta. What does tiyuvta mean? It's a kasha with no teretz. So it seems to be that Rav Nachman is disproven. We have a mafurish of Bryce that says that a shlish, by virtue of the fact that we have relied on him, the loiva and the malva, it means we have entrusted our ne'emonos with him. And if he says, and he produces the shoiva, even though it does not conform to the regular parameters of a shtar, because it doesn't have edim, doesn't matter. We have entrusted him, and he has a special ne'emonos, therefore Rav Nachman is now disproved. Says the Gemara, ki Osa Rav Dimi. When Rav Dimi came along, now this expression is to be found in many places. We have certainly come across this expression in other places. What does it mean he came? What does it mean he came? Came from where? It means he came from, from Eretz Yisrael to Bovel. We learn the Talmud. Bavli, Bovel. So most of the Amoraim who are quoted live there in Bovel. Occasion, it says that the Amoraim came over from Eretz Yisrael. We certainly know there were Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael as well. That, of course, is the basis for the Talmud Yerushalmi. So, ki asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came along, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, lo'olam mevi raya, a person can always bring a raya. Remember, this was our original discussion. At what point do we say, sorry, case adjourned, and any proof that you bring from now on is not going to be accepted? So that was a discussion on Amud Aleph. So Rav Dimi now reports in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, La'olam mevi raya v'soisa. You could always bring a proof and be soisa. Remember, soisa means to break the din. Even though maybe initially I was convicted as guilty, but at some later point, if I bring a proof that backs up my innocence, soisa, we would break the din. Ad sheyistotem ta'anoisov, v'yoymar kirvu ployni uployni v'heiduni. Now let's just translate because these are tricky words. You can bring at any point evidence to back up your validity, your innocence, until such point sheyistosim ta'anoisov, until his taina, his claim has been stopped. I'm just translating. And he will say, kirvu ployni ployni ve'eduni. I will bring ployni, and they will testify for me. Very, very unclear words. Let's have a look at Rashi. Ad sheyistosim ta'anoisov. Mashma. The implication is that what we're talking about is the following. She Omar Bebezdin, he informally declared in Bezdin those two words. Ainly, I have nothing. Loi Eidim Veloi Raya. Remember in Amud Aleph we said that if you say ainly, then we have to be much more strict with you. Because once you've emphatically declared that you have no proof, then it's very suspicious if all of a sudden you afterwards bring proof. So ainly he says, Loi Eidim Veloi Raya. V'chazar v'omar, and then all of a sudden he backtracked and he said, "Kirvu ployni ployni." Yes, let me bring ployni and ployni. Shahayu mezumonim sham, who have been dedicated, allocated as edim. Yet mitchila, in the beginning, let's not forget that soisim ta'anoisov. What does soisim mean? He is stopped up. He has stopped his tainas, how so, loima, when he said those critical words, ainly. So now, let's try and reread the braisa, a very difficult expression, and the Gemara is going to discuss at length what exactly these words mean. He is allowed to bring proof of his innocence, ad, look back into the Gemara, ad she yistosim ta'anoisov, until he stops his taina. How does a person stop his taina? By saying those critical words, ainly. So it sounds like the braisa is saying, you are allowed to bring further proof to back up your innocence until such point that you said ainly. Once you said ainly, it's game over. Okay, but now keep on reading. And he will say, Kirvu ployni ployni vehiyuduni. Let me bring ployni and ployni, and they will testify for me. Now, isn't that an inherent contradiction? You just said that he can bring proof until he stops his taina. What does that mean, he stops his taina? Basically, he ends his own case by saying ainly. So how does the braisa now continue and say, and then he can say, ployni or ployni will come and testify. I thought you just told me that once he said ainly, you cannot bring further edus. So how can the braisa say you can bring further edus until you've stopped your taina, which means until you've said ainly, and then you can bring edus? Doesn't read. It literally doesn't read. And that's the Gemara's kasha. Says the Gemara, I don't understand what you're talking about. Ha gufa kasha. What does that mean, ha gufa kasha? This is difficult inherently. It doesn't make sense. Omrut, you said on the one hand, yistosim ta'anoisov, quote unquote. That once you said ainly, it's all over. Whose opinion is that? Oson l'rabbonon. So we have come to the Rabbonon's opinion. Didn't the Rabbonon say, no, actually we said on Amud Aleph, this is where we paskin, that once you are sosim ta'anoisov, once you said ainly, that's it, it's all over. But then you kept on adding words and you said, v'hoda omrut, but then you said, Kirvu ish ployni ployni veiduni. You can still bring edim. Well, that's a different opinion than Oson Reb Shimon Gamliel. That's the other opinion. Remember, Reb Shimon Gamliel held that even after you've said the words ainly, it's never too late. So you've said a statement, and basically, it's a bit of a cholent of the Rabbonon and Reb Shimon Gamliel. You began saying that you can bring edus until you are soisim your taina, which means until you said ainly. Ah, okay, that means, whose opinion are you telling me? The Rabbanon. The once you said ainly, it's all over. Well, how can you finish that very same sentence and say, yes, and then he can bring plainy or plainy? How can you bring Edom after that? That's a different opinion. That's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Can you please make up your mind? Are you passing like Rabbonon? Are you passing like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? So we have to hold it over here. But this is, we left off with the Kasha. But Ezras Hashem Yisborach, we hope this is the game plan. We are going to try and finish the Omud sometime next week. And then, as is our way, we will go back and do Chazorah from where we started this man, which is on Daf Lamed, Ahmed Aleph, all being well.